Second case, United States v. Harrington. Appellant ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Appellant may argue. This is a 62 appeal.
Good morning, Chief Judge Stuckey and members of the court. May it please the court, I am Captain Alexander Navarro, and along with my co-counsel, Mr. Mark Brueger, we represent the appellant in this case, Staff Sergeant Matthew Harrington. Your Honor, with the court's permission, I'd ask for 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. At his original court-martial, Sergeant Harrington was deprived of the ability to present exculpatory evidence through in-person witness testimony. The Air Force Court reversed his conviction. However, because of the government's unreasonable delay in processing the rehearing, he is still unable to present that exculpatory evidence through in-person witness testimony. Your Honor, as you mentioned, this is an Article 62 appeal, and this court should review the military judge's decision to dismiss the case and the evidence in light most favorable to Sergeant Harrington as he prevailed at trial. If it's acceptable to this court, I'd like to begin discussing prejudice, as the Air Force Court found that the first three Barker factors had been favored Sergeant Harrington.
If I could, Captain Navarro, I'd like to focus on prejudice, and I'd like to tee it up because I think, at least in my mind, it's a very narrow point, but it's an extremely pivotal point in terms of the prejudice argument. I'm speaking specifically of the fourth prong of Barker v. Wingo and the third subset of that prong. I told you it was narrow. So let's assume that the first three prongs are met. And then when we're looking at prejudice, let's assume for the sake of argument, we know he wasn't incarcerated, but also for the second one, that there was no undue anxiety. So then we're wondering whether there's prejudice there in terms of the defense having been somehow affected by this. Now, we've got the MJ on one side of this, and we got the CCA on the other side of this. And I'm wondering which one is right. Now, the military judge found, quote, it is likely that at least some of the exculpatory evidence which the CCA directed to be admitted at this hearing would have been available for use at the hearing absent the government delays. The CCA says quite the opposite. It says it is equally, if not more likely, these memories were lost during the more than 31 months that elapsed between the first trial and the second. Now, in your brief on page 23, you cite to page 281 of the record for support of the military judge's finding. And I think that's a typo because there is no page 281. If you're referring to page 231, I don't find information in there that supports your position. So I'd like to hear from you, which is correct, the MJ's position or the CCA's position? And first off, do you agree that it is your burden to demonstrate that that prejudice was shown?
Yes, Your Honor, it was the defense's burden to prove prejudice in this case, and that's what they did. To answer your question, the military judge, he dismissed this case after sitting on the case for several months, after providing multiple rulings, after considering multiple motions to dismiss and motions to reconsider. He was in the best position to look at the evidence, hear the testimony, and as the chief judge of the Air Force, make that heavy decision to dismiss a sexual assault case. And so it's our view that he's correct. And with regard to what supports that decision, that it is likely that had the government moved expeditiously, at least some of that evidence would be still be available. I guess I turn this court attention to Sergeant KW's testimony as one of the things on page 228, Your Honor. And what she says is she's asked, do you believe that at some point you had a much better memory of this? And she says, correct, including when you testified in 2016. So that's one piece of her testimony that, yes, at one point I remembered more of this in 2016, and she's saying this in March of 2020. And so the judge can look at that testimony from Sergeant KW, and not just her, but also the fact that Mr. LB no longer remembers things, and then also Sergeant SC. And he can look at their testimony and say, yes, it is a fact that at one point they remembered this, and now they do not. And if the government had moved more quickly, at least some of that evidence would still be available. And so it's also the aggregate amount of evidence.
But she received her medical diagnosis sometime prior to that, and it was because of her medical condition that she was experiencing significant cognitive issues. I'm still finding it a little bit difficult to find in the record here, even on 228, what exactly the underpinning was of the MJ's finding. Are you saying that we should look at this in light most favorable to the military judge's ruling, that that's the key?
Yes, Your Honor. And under that deferential standard, you can see how a judge would see how these three witnesses had memory of it, especially in 2016, and now in March of 2020, after the government's delay, they no longer they have those memories.
But how does that fit in? Like I said, the CCA is saying, hey, 31 months elapsed here between the first and the second trial. Why is that attributable to the government's inaction?
And so the military judge didn't say that all of the evidence would still be available, but he said at least some of that evidence would likely still be available had they moved more quickly. And that makes sense given the fact that, in a common sense sort of way, memory, the way it degrades, if the government had moved more quickly and they had reached out to these witnesses and they had actually produced them, that evidence would likely still be available. And so under the deferential standards, it's easy to see how the judge could conclude that, especially when there's three witnesses at issue.
Yes, I wanted to ask about the same thing. First of all, welcome back. I hope you have a good night's sleep between arguments. Your brief cites page 281 of the record, not the joint appendix. And on page 281 of the record, there is an argument by defense counsel where defense counsel says, yes, Your Honor, something that we forgot to put, at least give, make sure the court's attention was brought to, is Sergeant Wallace did testify that her memory in October was better, and she remembered more things in October than she does now. And that seems to be the key thing, because if she had forgotten everything already by October, then it doesn't seem like there would be prejudice. But if she remembered some things in October that she has now forgotten, then there is prejudice. But looking back at Sergeant Wallace's testimony, I didn't see a specific thing that said that she remembered more in October than she did at the time of the motion. And is there something in the record that would, because that's just the defense argument right there, that something that actually supports, not that she has lost her memory, but that the loss of memory occurred, that the government's delay contributed to that loss of memory, that there were things that she remembered in October that she didn't remember later.
Yes, Your Honor, and perhaps when defense counsel said that, perhaps they were thinking about maybe a witness interview they did. But as far as what he was probably tying back to was that statement from Sergeant KW where she's asked, do you believe at some point, and so she doesn't say October, it's not said October, but do you believe at some point you had a much better memory of this, she says correct, including, I guess in addition to when she testified in 2016. And so that's likely what he's pointing to when he's saying that at some other time she had a better memory, perhaps including in October. And it's, again, just not Sergeant KW at issue, her memory, to show prejudice. It's also Mr. LB and Sergeant SC. And so it's all of their memories that.
But do you agree with the premise that it's not enough to show that they've lost memory since the incident happened, but that it was the government's delay that contributed to a loss of memory, that there must be some evidence of that, as opposed to all the delay that took place on appeal?
Yes, Your Honor, there does have to be a link between the two. And in this case, the military judge could conclude that had the government move more quickly with the case, at least some of the memory would still be available. If the government had gone out to those witnesses, they'd still have some of those memories. And it would be tough, frankly, for the defense to prove this concretely. They'd have to ask Sergeant KW, you know, when did you forget this fact? And obviously she couldn't do that. And so knowing that that's the tough part of memory, the judge can say, hey, it's reasonable to conclude that had the government moved more expeditiously, if they had reached out to these witnesses, Sergeant KW would likely remember this, or at least maybe Mr. LB would remember that, or Sergeant SC. And in this case, there's just so little remaining. And so with regard to prejudice, it's one of the things that the government offers is that this can be remedied through some other form. And so I'd like to address that, because one of the things that's brought up is a stipulation of fact. If this court rules against Sergeant Harrington, there's nothing that binds the government to entering into a favorable stipulation of fact with Sergeant Harrington. In addition to the fact that Sergeant Harrington shouldn't be forced to enter into a stipulation of fact, if this case is sent back, at the trial level, there's nothing that guarantees Sergeant Harrington a stipulation of fact that has these facts, or that the government doesn't come back and say, you know, we also want facts about the complaining witnesses, her intoxication, things that aren't beneficial to Sergeant Harrington. And so if Sergeant Harrington is put in a position like that, then really it hasn't been remedied, and almost he's been prejudiced even more if he's put in a position of no evidence or stipulation of fact that could actually hurt him. If it includes facts that don't really fully encompass the exculpatory evidence, or it includes evidence about intoxication or something like that. In addition, if Mr. LB's testimony is presented through some type of, we call it a cold, stale record, his testimony occurred at a 412 hearing. And so in that, it does not fully encompass his testimony that you would have at a fully litigated court-martial in front of members. It's going to be just the bare-bones facts that happen in a 412 hearing where the military judge is more of a gatekeeper. He's not a fact finder where more information about his ability to recall, things that would help his credibility, that sort of thing would come in. And then next, when you're looking at, if this goes to a rehearing without the available evidence, you're going to have the complaining witness, Sergeant FC, testify. And in the first court-martial, it's even noted in the record that there's a momentary pause where she sobs. And so her evidence or her testimony was probably compelling because that was the basis for the first conviction. However, Sergeant Harrington is going to have to combat that with documents to the members or some type of recording. And the members should be able, and Sergeant Harrington should be able to defend himself by presenting evidence that's going to help his defense, including witness testimony where the members can ask questions in a court-martial. They can judge that witness's credibility, and especially as they're weighing the two between Sergeant FC and then the witnesses that Sergeant Harrington produces. That's going to be missing in this case because the members will not be able to judge the credibility of Mr. LB, Sergeant KW, and Sergeant SC.
Counsel, what if we agree with you that there is prejudice to the appellant's defense here in this case, but we can't find sufficient basis to attribute the losses of the evidence of the memories to the period of delay that is clearly attributable to the government? Is that the end of it?
Your Honor, it's hard to think of a way that the delay isn't attributable to the government and therefore it has caused prejudice. In our position is just that had the government moved more quickly to this case, or the reason why it even took the unreasonable delay of 246 days, it's the government's fault. And because of that,
The biggest delay in the case is, you could say, is the original military judge's fault, right? He ruled on the case. That ruling turned out to be an error. That caused the biggest delay in the case, right? And it's entirely possible that these memories were lost during that period. But what do we do with that?
Your Honor, the person that loses in that situation is Sergeant Harrington. The fact that, you know, but for the erroneous decision by the original military judge, perhaps he wouldn't even be in this position. And so in any of those scenarios, Sergeant Harrington is left in a position where he's similarly situated to that first court-martial where he's trying to combat the evidence of Sergeant F.C. and try to somehow piece a defense together to combat that. And so even in that case, we would hope that because he's been prejudiced, that this court would find that is a Sixth Amendment violation, that in so seldomly can an appellant actually point to prejudice in so many of these Sixth Amendment cases, the speedy trial cases. And here we actually have a case where an appellant can say, here's how my defense has been impaired. Now, unless there are any other questions, I will I'll conclude and save my remarks for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel for the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Tsuki and members of the court. May it please the court. I am Major Dale Perkle, and along with my co-counsel, Colonel Sean Speranza, we represent the United States. The facts of this case are not a watershed rehearing case in which to set the bar for a constitutional violation under any amendment. This court should hold that the military judge erred when he dismissed appellant's rehearing with prejudice for a violation of the Sixth Amendment right to speedy trial. The judge's decision to bar the United States from ever prosecuting appellant was error in this case because appellant has proven no facially unreasonable delay to even warrant a full Barker analysis. Because there was and remains clear error in the judge's factual determinations and legal conclusions regarding witness memory loss, and most importantly, there is obviously no prejudice to the defense because no evidence has been lost. As an initial matter, the government acknowledges error in our brief with respect to the appropriate time period to analyze under the Sixth Amendment. The correct period of time to assess during this Sixth Amendment speedy trial analysis started 4 February 2019 and ended on 10 March 2020. Under the Supreme Court's Barker test, appellant has the burden to show facially unreasonable delay, and this court should hold him to that burden. The government does not concede there was facially unreasonable delay on these
what
facts.
What was the government doing? The government was piddling around, making what it sounds like a phone call a month, and looking at the wall.
Well, Your Honor,
what was the government doing all this time?
Yes, Your Honor. The CCA found that the longest period of
And virtually all of it's attributable to the government. Does the government concede that?
It depends on which portion of period of time we're talking about, Your Honor, under the second Barker analysis. On its face, when an accused who is not and has never been languishing in prison, and when the United States was ready for trial in October, 6 months after the case was returned from appeal, and where the United States objected to further continuance, these facts do not warrant a further Barker analysis. So, Your Honor, even if we were to assume that the first 6 months from February to October were the responsibility of the government, that is not enough under Doggett, under federal case law, to reach the suggested threshold of 1 year delay. And certainly, the military judge and the CCA agreed that the United States did not violate Rule for Court-Martial 707 and proceeded to arraignment within the prescribed amount of time, 120 days. So when the United States does not violate the rules for court-martial and when the Supreme Court and federal case law have set a suggested threshold, although not a bright-line rule, that 1 year is an appropriate amount of time to begin a trial, these facts do not warrant a full Barker analysis. The cases cited by the military judge all involve pretrial confinement, their Article 10 analysis. That is not this case. The CCA below was not convinced there was facially unreasonable delay and only assumed there was for the purposes of their analysis. Assuming a full Barker analysis is required, however, the persuasive prong is prong 4, prejudice. And in this case, it clearly lacks merit. In the issue presented, appellant alleges lost information constitutionally impairing his defense. But he pinpoints nothing that is lost. All of the evidence the CCA relied on in order to order a new trial or authorize a new trial is contained in the previous record. Those facts about the Jenga game are not at issue. There is no contest that appellant and the alleged victim in the case engaged in body shots as described at length in the record. The appellant has the burden to show prejudice, and the military judge failed to hold him to that burden. First, the military judge found that Mr. LB was the only witness who could provide some evidence of the body shots, which the government has shown in our brief. There are multiple other witnesses currently and in past testimony that can provide that evidence the CCA reviewed in its original trial. The trial judge erroneously found that the CCA required this testimony must be presented at the rehearing and erroneously found that it was lost. It's also worth noting that Mr. LB admitted during March of 2020 that he was evading the government's effort to produce him at trial.
Can I just ask you, you're saying that erroneously found that needed to be introduced. Didn't that flow directly from the CCA's initial opinion in this case, though? The CCA said, can't be deprived of this information because it's so critical to the defense. So why was the military judge wrong in saying, hey, this is critical information according to the CCA. We need to get it in here.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the CCA, in its own opinion, noted the judge's error in concluding that their opinion required this evidence be admitted. So to the extent the CCA can speak for itself, they believe that their original hearing held only that appellant was prejudiced in his first trial for not having introduced that information, but did not hold that it was required to be introduced in the second. Certainly in this case, if it were to be introduced,
I'm not sure of the distinction you're drawing there. Saying it was error not to introduce it in the first, but you're saying the military judge said therefore it needs to come in, but the CCA in the second go-round said what?
The CCA, in their opinion, Your Honor, noted the judge's error that his interpretation of Harrington 1 was that the CCA required this evidence be admitted at the rehearing. The CCA clarified only that their ruling was the appellant was prejudiced in his original trial from its exclusion. So to the extent that's a distinction without a difference, ultimately, Mr. LB is not the only individual who can provide this information. It was error for the judge to have found that. It was also error for the judge to find that memories of specific witnesses have been adversely affected by the passage of time from February of 2019 to March of 2020, but this is not per se prejudicial, nor was it caused by the United States. And fundamentally, as this court has noted, this is a causation issue. There is nothing in the record to show memory loss occurred after 4 February 2019, which is the only time relevant for the Sixth Amendment analysis. The defense could have interviewed witnesses between February of 2019 and March 2020 and shown some memory loss, but they did not. They have to show that some of the memory loss occurred in this 13-month period of time and that during those periods of delay, the government was responsible.
Counsel, on that point, I think I just heard counsel for the appellant say, well, how does somebody prove when they forgot a fact? That it just seems like it's something incapable of, I don't remember it, and I don't remember when I remembered it, because I don't remember it.
Yes, Your Honor. So to begin, it is difficult, and it should be because of the remedy provided by the Sixth Amendment. But exactly what defense trial counsel could have done is, when the rehearing was authorized in February, they could have contacted witnesses. They could have interviewed witnesses in June, July, August, September. They could have requested depositions in those months to preserve a witness's testimony and memory at that time. And then, come March of 2020, asked the witnesses the same question, asked for testimony and compared the two, and actually shown memory loss in this period of time.
But they did when not you say that. They could have, indeed they could have, but it's a little bit of a tit for tat here, isn't it? Where you say, the government says the defense could have done this, but the defense says, listen, there was no need for an additional investigation. There was the same charge. There was no need for Article 32. why didn't this get pushed way at the top of the list for prosecution by the government? So where does that leave us when you're saying they could have done this and the defense is saying, but the government could have done that?
Yes, Your Honor. The government acknowledges it could have proceeded more quickly, but the government did not act in a constitutionally unreasonable manner in bringing the appellant to a rehearing. The defense trial counsel had equal access to these witnesses and the ability to depose, identify witness loss, request memory preservation, and they did not do those things. The United States also, while there was no Article 32 hearing and while these witnesses were the same, the military judge failed to account for the differences in an original trial versus a rehearing. And there are different things that must be accomplished in order to bring someone to a rehearing. In this case, appellant had to be pulled back to active duty, moved from appellant leave. Witnesses that were all at one point in time stationed where the court-martial is had PCS'd, moved all over the world, and were evading the government. So to the extent that this was not a trial where they had to identify new witnesses and investigate, there are other matters that come up in a rehearing that the judge failed to account for. And again, the United States met the rule for court-martial clock and, in light of case law, proceeded at a constitutionally permissible pace. Even, however, if this court were to find or were to assume, without conceding, that there was memory loss during this 13-month period, that's still not enough to show prejudice under the Sixth Amendment. This is a rehearing, and all of this evidence is captured in prior sworn testimony. The military judge erred in finding that both MRE 804B1 and MRE 8035 were not sufficient remedies for this issue. Initially, with respect to his ruling under 804B1, he ignores the purpose of MRE 412. This is a rule presuming exclusion, and counsel had every incentive during these close hearings to over-include information they believe relevant in order to convince the military judge that what they are saying in this hearing is necessary for trial. The record does not support that trial defense counsel in their multiple requests for 412 hearings held back during these sessions. It's hard to imagine a more similar motive that the appellant defense would have had in the original trial that they would have had in the new trial on the same charge with the same witnesses. They had the same motive to develop former testimony.
Now, is that a universal rule? I guess I'm wondering to what extent we should grant deference to the military judge in deciding that they're not the equivalent. Yes, you can look at evidence as being evidence. Is it a universal principle that as long as it is something that could be introduced before the finder of fact, even if it is on paper, that it is equivalent evidence to someone who is testifying? I guess I'm asking, is that a legal issue that you're arguing, or is it a factual determination that we should grant deference to the military judge on?
Your Honor, I'll attempt to answer your question first with respect to MRE 804. We believe the military judge's legal conclusion that this, under the facts of this case, there was not a sufficiently similar motive, should not be given any deference. The reason for that is if in a rehearing with the same...
I'm asking something different, though, in terms of different motive. I'm saying the defense point is you give us a cold piece of paper, and that is not nearly the equivalent of having a live witness. And I'm asking you, are you saying that it's a legal principle that as long as that evidence goes before the finder of fact, that's all that matters? Or is this something that we should be granting deference to the military judge on? That's what I'm asking.
Yes, Your Honor. This is a legal principle. And to answer your question, that is shown by the military rules of evidence contemplating memory loss and providing remedies for that loss, to include the rules of evidence that I've mentioned here. Case law also supports that even in cases, in rehearings, in trials where there's delay and there's memory loss, that is simply not enough. Often, memory loss and the passage of time aids the defense. If the witnesses are produced at trial subject to cross-examination, that is legally sufficient. The defense is not entitled to a perfect defense, but a defense on the merits with the witnesses they requested. The United States produced every witness that the defense requested for live testimony, and if they were to pinpoint missing pieces of evidence, it's all contained in his prior trial testimony, and that is legally sufficient. This court must find it's legally sufficient to retry appellant. The extent to which that undercuts the burden of proof or goes to witness credibility is all for the finder of fact at the new trial to find, but should not be a bar to, in fact, trying an appellant. Surely, we would not want to incentivize defense witnesses' memories to fade in order to invoke a Sixth Amendment speedy trial analysis or find prejudice. The military judge also concluded he would not require the defense to use MRE 803 and put the government in a better position, but that's also not supported by the record. The United States was going to also have to read in testimony as evidenced by its motion for finding witnesses unavailable. The military judge erred when he punished the United States for their erroneous exclusion of MRE 412 evidence in the 2016 trial.
Counsel, can I ask you a question that may not be entirely fair? What do you think is your strongest point? What do you think blows the defense out of the water here in terms of if this court were to look at this point, we would say game over?
Yes, Your Honor. The strongest point is that appellant has not proven causation of memory loss. Equally as important is that...
Causation? Is that what you said? The causation,
yes, Your Honor,
of memory loss?
Equally as important, the United States would say that...
You mean that not in terms of the medical condition causing it. You mean in terms of it was the delay attributable to the government was the cause of the diminishment in the ability of the witnesses to recollect what had occurred.
Yes, Your Honor. And in addition to that, the existence of an entire trial sworn testimony from the same accused with the same charge and the same witnesses, and that every piece of evidence he says he now needs exists in the record of trial and is available. Both the judge and the CCA found there are ways to admit this evidence to the jurors. And so the United States would say those are both equally important points and why appellant loses on appeal. Taking a step back, ruling in favor of appellant would pull the Sixth Amendment from its proper context and abuse the drastic remedies so required when that amendment is actually violated. This is a rehearing, and this court must be clear of what's expected in rehearings. The clock for a rehearing starts in accordance with Rule for Court Martial 707 when the case is returned to the convening authority to take action with the record of trial, in this case, for February 2019, and ends at trial on the merits, in this case, 10 March 2020. Modifying this court's holding in Becker in light of the Supreme Court case, yes, Betterman v. Montana, this court should find that the Supreme Court and federal case law's suggested threshold of 1 year is an informative but not bright-line rule to trigger the first Barker analysis. This court should decline to take the position that the judge ruled in the appellate advanced that rehearings necessarily must move constitutionally faster than the rules for court-martial require, a nearly impossible standard for the government to meet at any rehearing. Appellant's position would require the government to sua sponte preserve witness memory immediately without request from the government. Appellant's position would ignore or remove available mechanisms to cure memory loss, including specified rules for court-martial, the statute of limitations, and the heightened due process Fifth Amendment protections. Not holding appellant to require to his burden of proof to prove causation of memory loss after the rehearing is returned incentivizes long defense appellate delays causing this memory loss. Again, this is not the watershed rehearing case to find error, and this court must view the case in the light of the drastic remedy available, dismissal with prejudice. Finally, if appellant were to prevail on the motion before this court, the outcome would be that the United States would be forever foreclosed from holding a trial, which it was ready and capable to hold in October of 2019 and March of 2020. Not allowing this case to proceed against the appellant in the absence of any constitutional wrongdoing on the part of the United States or prejudice to the appellant would compound the judge's error further. Moreover, it would permanently skew the fairness of future hearings for all parties. Therefore, this court should uphold the CCA's decision to reverse the military judge's erroneous decision to dismiss the charge and specification with prejudice and find appellant's Sixth Amendment right to speedy trial was not violated and expeditiously remand this case to trial on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll start by just addressing the government continually asks this court to look at a threshold or a year or something like that. However, and the CCA pointed this out, that under Barker, the test is not amenable to bright-line rules. It is not a certain number will check the box for a speedy trial violation. What Barker also says is that it depends on the circumstances. And the circumstances of this case are that it was a rehearing. There was no Article 32 hearing required. It was the same amount of witnesses. It was something that the government should have moved expeditiously on. Second, I want to be more responsive to Judge Hardy's question with regard to the government's role in this whole thing. And it was something that the trial judge pointed out, but the government at the 412 hearing, at the original 412 hearing, they did oppose that evidence coming in. So they had some role in this. And then even after that, when there was the defense counsel request, they moved slowly on that, and then they opposed the continuance for that. And so they have a role in these things. And then with regard to causation, it would be almost impossible for any appellant to prove causation. This case could have taken 3 years to do a rehearing over the year threshold that the government invites this court to adopt. And any appellant would be impossible for them to ask a witness, when in these 3 years did you forget this information? Or in the government, what the government would ask the appellant to do is interview these witnesses during this delay of time and say, what have you forgotten and why? And so the causation can simply be, as the military judge looked at this, is that memory degrades, and that if there's this much delay and this delay is unreasonable, it's easy to come to the conclusion that had they moved more expeditiously, at least some of this evidence between these three witnesses would still be available. And then, Your Honor, you asked about is this a legal or factual issue, and we would ask this court to defer to the military judge for that conclusion. And if you look at Sergeant S.E., it was someone that the government brought in to for their motion for reconsideration. They brought him in and said, here's a live witness, here's someone who can testify to this information. And the military judge, sitting where he was sitting, he made it known that this particular witness, he found that he was not reliable. And so that's something that only the military judge can really assess. And so there are factual dimensions to that, in addition to the fact that Sergeant S.C. doesn't remember some of the information. And so looking at this particular appellant, the fact that at his original trial, he had this exculpatory evidence, he wasn't able to present it, and now here, as years have passed, he's still not able to present that evidence through in-person testimony. That's enough to say that his defense has been impaired. And so, accordingly, we ask this court to uphold the trial judge's decision and dismiss this case with prejudice. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted, and the court is in recess pending further order of